holy crap, are we actually living in a virtual reality?
Welcome to the Future Thinkers Podcast. I'm Mike Gilliland.
And I'm Yuvia Ivanova. And this podcast is all about the future.
Hey guys, welcome to episode 5. This episode is all about Minecraft and virtual realities. So a couple of weeks ago, Yuvia and I bought Minecraft, and it wasn't the smartest decision for business, but it's been a lot of fun just to kind of relax in Bali and play some video games. And so we've been playing this game quite a bit, and it's been interesting to watch our perceptions of reality change a little bit from the amount we've been playing this game, and to see it sort of creep up into, you know, even our dreams. For example, the other day, I woke up in the middle of the night, and I heard the sounds of rats in our ceiling. We're in a little house right on a rice field, so rats can get in quite easily. So I could hear them scurrying around in between the floorboards upstairs. Immediately, my first thought was, I should go up there and plant a water source block like Minecraft and drown them out. And like a water source block is just a block that you place that just spews out water. There's nothing like it in reality. It wasn't like I could attach that to anything that already exists aside from like turning on a tap. So it was kind of a weird thing to think because I've been playing this game so much. But one of the things I wanted to talk about is how much this simple pixelated game can absorb you and start to make you think with the game mechanics more than reality mechanics. You know, our idea is that if a little game like this with low resolution can sort of convince us of a different reality, then things like Oculus Rift in the next year or so are going to completely absorb us. And so, Yuvia, why don't you actually just catch people up on what Minecraft is?
Right. For those of you who don't know, Minecraft has been one of the most popular games for PC ever. I think the main version has sold over 14 million copies, and if we include the mobile version and the Xbox version, it's about 30 million or even more. Minecraft is all about mining blocks and then making things out of those blocks. So the blocks can be different elements like iron or dirt or sand, and you can mine them and convert them into other things and then build things out of them. And you also have items in the game. So it's all about building these crazy things, and people get really creative with it, and there are different modifications for the game where you can build actual functioning computers and you can build spaceships and all kinds of stuff.
The environments in it are procedurally generated, and they're generated as you explore the territory. So as you go out and pick a direction to explore, the map is being generated automatically right in front of you. And that's one thing I thought was interesting about virtual reality is that a lot of people would argue that we need to, in order to make a convincing virtual reality, we need to simulate the entire universe. We need to simulate everything from a micro to a macro scale. From my experience with this simple little game, that's not true at all. We only need to simulate things as far as the senses can go. That's it. If you want to convince me of a virtual reality, you only need to convince me of the room that I'm in. And that's actually kind of how Minecraft works. It loads what it calls chunks. And these are areas of several meters or even, you can go up to about a kilometer, I think, in the game world. But that's all you need to render, is just whatever could be visible with the naked eye. And then anything else just gets loaded when you get close up to it. Even when you're dreaming, like, dreams can be so convincing that they're real while you're in them. And then when you wake up, you realize just from your new perspective that it was a dream. There's no way for you to actually prove that that was a dream and that this is reality. Mm-hmm. Or vice versa, that this is a dream and that's reality. And there's this old Chinese philosopher who dreams he's spending his entire day as a butterfly, and he's just flying around as a butterfly, thinking butterfly thoughts and existing as a butterfly. And then he wakes up from this dream, and he's this Chinese philosopher again, but he can't tell if he's just the butterfly dreaming that he's a Chinese philosopher or if he's a philosopher dreaming he's a butterfly. And it's just interesting that there's no way to prove it either way.
I think another objection that people have is that the design of the virtual reality has to be down to a T. You know, every single element has to be believable. But I don't think that's actually true, because when you play a video game or when you watch a movie, you get so absorbed in it. And even though some elements of it might not be believable, you suspend your disbelief in order to participate in the world of the movie or the video game. And I think after a while, you just forget that those things aren't even real. For example, in the game, there's a day cycle. So you get sunrises and sunsets, but they're blocky sunsets. And, you know, sometimes I'd be planting my crops or whatever in the game, and then I would look over and the sunset is there, and I'm just like admiring this blocky sunset.
Meanwhile, in the distance, I'm building like my fortress of doom on a mountain. I look down in the field, and there's Yuvi just staring off into the distance, looking at the blocky sunset, just like she does in real life. It was pretty funny for us to play the game together and sort of see how our personalities actually like bleed into the game as well.
Yeah, Mike is always messing with me.
Yeah, I've set so many traps for you you're not even aware of.
I think it's really interesting that our brain sort of selectively focuses our attention only on the things that it thinks are important in that moment. And it also uses mental shortcuts to assume what things are or fill in the blanks. For example, color. We see such a millions of colors, such a wealth of color. But in reality, we only have, in our perceptory organs, in the eye, we only have cells to have perception of three colors. Three! And then the brain just fills in the rest. So you could argue that we're hallucinating those colors, because we aren't actually seeing them. So I think it's the same with a lot of things. We think this reality is so solid and that what we see is real, but most of it is just being made up in the brain as we go.
Why do we see red, green, and blue? Why is it always those? RGB, it's the way we program our computer screens. It's just the basis of how we mix color. I kind of wonder, this is just my theory, but red would be blood, so we would need to see red to know when someone's injured or when we're injured or when we're hunting something, that we've killed it. Green would be, you know, our environment around us. Blue would be the sky. So say you're looking into the distance, tracking a predator. You maybe need to know the difference between sky and land so that you can track that predator and know how far away it is. I don't know, just an idea. But so all of this kind of begs the question, could we already be in a virtual reality environment? We don't really know what we're here for. We don't know, you know, some of us believe it's God or some of us believe it's an accident. And there's a lot of scientists that are actually arguing deeply about this subject, saying there is a lot of proof that this is a simulation. And if you look up on Wikipedia, this idea is called simulation theory.
One branch of this simulation hypothesis that's particularly bizarre and interesting to me is the idea that there's not just one simulation, but there are thousands of these simulations being run side by side. And the reason could be that the beings that set up the simulation are trying to test out some idea or trying to see if we can develop interstellar flight or a certain vaccine or something else that could help their civilization advance. So they're kind of using us like a farm for ideas.
We already do that with any system that we have enough computing power to do that for. Like the financial sector, we do tons of simulation. There's actually a guy named Alex Wisner Gross who believes that our first artificial intelligence will actually be developed from the financial sector. And that's a really interesting idea. Not exactly the most morally enlightened sector in the world, but it could be interesting to see what an AI looks like coming out of that. We might have talked about this already, but this guy developed an equation for intelligence. And it's sort of like the E equals MC squared of intelligence. You should really check it out. We might have actually mentioned this before, but we'll leave a link to it in the show notes. There's a video, a TED Talk, where he explains the whole thing. The equation is that we as beings are trying to maximize our future possibilities. That's it. Like, maximize our chance of having options in the future. And he's applied this equation to multiple software systems without actually giving the software a goal to accomplish something. It just applied this algorithm saying, okay, you will die if you do this, this, and this, so maximize your future options. And it tended to figure out what it needed to do and then accomplish that goal and optimize very, very quickly for it. I was wondering the other day when we were playing, what happens to those game characters when we leave the game. And I know they're not real, and I don't project anything onto them, but I was thinking about it, just pretending from their perspective, what it must be like when the player leaves the game and everything comes to a screeching halt when the laptop is shut. And from their perception, there's got to be no change. When I come into the game after being on a break from it, I open the laptop up, I start the game, and all of the other characters are in the same spot that they were when I closed it. And to them, like, nothing must happen. They must not skip a beat. Mm-hmm. And I kind of think, from the perspective of God or infinite intelligence or whatever you want to call it, how interesting it must be to see everything beyond time, to see time and space as this singular thing that this entity exists outside of. And it's like, all reality and all dimensions can be contained on this, say, DVD and plugged into a DVD player and played start to finish. And maybe he stops and goes to the bathroom and comes back and he restarts us and we wouldn't know anyway. There's physicists who say time is a dimension, right? Mm-hmm. And that all time that ever has been and ever will be exists simultaneously. It's all happened right now, which is sort of the same way I picture that data is written onto a DVD. Like, the entire movie is there on this disc, whether you play it backwards, forwards, or you don't play it and leave it in the shelf. The whole movie exists. Mm-hmm. The only way you actually perceive it is by playing it forward. Well, you can play it backwards, but the only way you can understand it is by playing it forward. And I think that has something to do with why we are experiencing time in a forward direction, is that maybe it all exists at once, but we can only decode information in a forward direction. And that's why we experience it that way. But maybe that's all it is. It's just an experience. And in reality, it all exists simultaneously.
I think one of the reasons why I like the idea of having virtual reality that is slightly different from our own reality, or maybe even vastly different, is that when we're living in this reality, it's kind of formed by the society that we're in, by the people that are around us, and we get used to it. So it can be difficult to think outside of the box. But when you have this other reality that you can go into, then you can apply your creativity, sort of you get a fresh start to apply your creativity. And you can come up with really cool things in that reality. And sometimes they just stay in that reality. But sometimes you can bring them back into your first reality. You can get insight into the things that you can positively affect in your day-to-day life based on your experiences in a virtual reality. So I don't think it's all useless. You know, I actually used to be sort of opposed to video games. I thought they were kind of pointless and just a waste of time. But I guess it depends on the game. If it's a really open world game where you can actually create a lot of interesting things, I think they're quite useful. But yeah, one of the things that I found useful for myself from playing Minecraft is that there are many different ways to do the same thing, especially with all the different modifications that we've downloaded. So there's always the way that takes the longest time and maybe it's kind of boring. And then there's the way that takes less time, more efficient. There's also the cheat mode, so you can just go and grab the item from the, you know, from the existing items. But I actually prefer playing on the non-cheat mode because it's more interesting. You can actually go out and find all the ingredients for whatever you're making. But that's one thing that I've brought back into my real life. Is there's this concept of 80-20. 20% of all of your efforts cause 80% of results. So it's kind of a efficiency mindset. And so I've been doing that a lot, just like trying to figure out the most efficient way to do something. And I already do that in real life, but I think it just reminded me of the importance of it.
Me, I'm just like wishing there was a cheat mode in real life, because I pretty much live in cheat mode in the game. I don't like playing inside someone else's system. You know, we've got the Galacticraft mod loaded in this game, so it allows you to go to space and go to Mars and everything, but you need to build your space shuttle and create oxygen tanks and everything, and it takes so long to build it, and you have to do so many different crazy intricate things to do it. And in my head, I'm like, someone else created this for the only purpose of being difficult, of making the final trip worthwhile. And so I'm kind of feel opposed to that, to playing in someone else's system just because they want something to be difficult or just because they want to make me jump through hoops. It kind of sounds like I just want my reward, but I think applying that attitude towards business, not necessarily like hacking or cheating, but thinking, what is the easiest, best, most efficient way to do this thing that I need to accomplish? What is the way that is just frictionless for me to get this thing accomplished? And that's proven to work so far. Mm-hmm. So to round off our Minecraft episode, there's a sort of a pseudo ending to this game where you fight a dragon and the credits roll. It's an open world, but there is this one element that you can actually beat the game in. And at the end of the game, there's a poem written by Julian Goh, and he writes this long story from the perspective of the game creators, as in, like, gods. And you're reading text written on a screen as it scrolls up the screen, and you're reading it as if you're reading their thoughts. And they talk about the nature of reality, they talk about what the simulation is in terms of the game, and in real life, they call the game the short dream and real life the long dream. And everything that we've talked about in this episode is so perfectly illustrated in this poem. You really need to check it out. So we'll leave a link to it in our show notes.
When Mike showed me this poem, I was blown away by how profound it is. Because it's in this, you know, somewhat silly, blocky game. But at the end, it's got this amazing poem that kind of blows your mind. And you're like, holy crap, are we actually living in a virtual reality?
Anyway, I think that's it for this episode. It's been kind of all over the place, but we've just been really obsessed with this game lately, so we wanted to share it. If you want to find out more information about anything that we talked about, as always, links are in the show notes.
And that's at futurethinkers.org/episode5. And if you like this episode, please consider subscribing to us. We're on Stitcher, iTunes, and a bunch of other podcast directories now. And if you really like it, then please leave us a review.
So yeah, we just actually launched the podcast just a few days ago. So upon recording this episode number 5, we've been starting to get feedback. So we want to encourage you guys to leave feedback. Let us know what kind of topics you'd like us to talk about in the future. The next topic is going to be about the individual and what it will mean to join the singularity and kind of join a collective mind. So we'll be talking about that, and that was suggested by listener Justin Cook. So shout out to you, Justin. Anyway, we'll see you in the next episode.
See you guys.